from your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one. Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to Conversations with David with my excellent co-host, the one and only David Icke. Good morning, David.
Hello, Maria.
How are you today?
I'm all right, yeah. I'm a bit more happy. Well, kind of. I finished a book I've been working on for a year about 3 days ago, three, 4 days ago. So, yeah, it's been a good week, really. But
great.
Of course, we've got madness at this end, as you've had madness at yours in terms of, you know, what happened with the attack in London
right.
And all that's come from it. And, you know, it's...
Well, what do you think about the fact, you know, I mean, I look at the news like it's almost every other hour that some other dastardly thing is happening. It's not even once a day. You know, here in the States, you know, we had, you know, everything from Boston to... the trains falling off the tracks, bridges collapsing... snow at the end of May in New York, twisters all over the Midwest.
Yep.
You know, and there you are in the UK where you have the guy who stabbed the soldier. Then in France, I understand a soldier was also stabbed or shot in the throat. It's like you can barely keep up. And I really feel like it's just the dark side. I don't know how else to explain them. The dark side just amping up their attacks and their fear. You know, the top news story today is this new virus that the warning in the news was it can kill everybody on Earth. Everybody needs to be afraid.
Yeah, it's a technique that has been called future shock, where you bombard people with so many shocks, so many things to fear, so many things to worry about, that you just turn them into emotional, you know, road traffic accidents. I mean, they're just in such a state of emotion. It's almost like emotionally, it's like someone keeps running around pricking you with your pin. You know, I mean, it's triggering these emotional reactions all the time. And, you know, a number of things can happen as a result of that. And that is that the more fearful people get, the more acquiescent they become, the more they look to authority to protect them, like mummy and daddy.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that can happen is that people become desensitized. If you live a life of a certain kind and a very, if you like, sheltered life, and then you get hit by some of these horrors, just one of them, then emotionally you're going to have a certain response.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be of, oh, you know, horror, like, oh my goodness, and all that stuff. But if they're constantly coming, you can get almost blasé to them. The horrors become the norm. It's like one of the things we've got to understand, I think this is the most important thing to understand for people to get any kind of fix on the world, is that it is not just run by insane people. It's full of insane people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a madhouse. And what happens is that if you're born into a madhouse and you grow up in it, you know nothing else, then to you, madness is normal. And what is happening today, more and more, as the world gets crazier, is that people are being born into it, and their normal is a normal which, you know, in another era would have been blatantly, horrifically abnormal.
Yeah.
There's a document that came to light, you will have heard of it, called Quiet Weapons for Quiet Wars. It came to light some decades ago, and it was a mind control manual, a mass mind control manual for people who were being recruited into this whole social engineering network to show them and train them and tell them how it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things it was saying is that basically you give people a shock and you wait for their reaction. And if their reaction is not too problematical for you, it's like pushing against a gate, you know, how much is the gate going to resist?
Right.
Then you, if there's no resistance that's going to stop you, then you just walk through the gate and you go on to the next gate and you do the same thing again. And at each gate, a new normal is established. So what this document talks about is the fact that, you know, people might, you know, be initially shocked by the change that's happened, but they will then encompass that change, that shock, into their new normal. And so all the time, you're transforming what people perceive as normal. And so what we've got in the world today and all the madness that goes on is considered normal, and people that are challenging the system are considered strange, extreme, and crazy. You know, it's interesting when I was chatting with someone this week, a friend of mine, Mike, and we were discussing how almost everything that anyone learns or is taught is what you might call the known. When you go to school throughout your young life and into your teenage years and onwards, you're being taught the known. And when you look at scientists and professors, they are considered kind of intellectual giants because of how much they know about the known. Doctors base their whole way of treating people on the known. And yet it's within the unknown that the answers lie.
Right.
And when you start exploring the unknown, you mean you can't really learn without exploring the unknown. Otherwise, all you're doing is repeating the known. And what is this known? It is only a set of beliefs that through repetition, society has basically accepted to be true.
Right.
And therefore, anyone that is challenging that assumed truth through repetition, nothing else, most of it, is considered extreme and strange, even dangerous, because what they're doing is pursuing the unknown. And that's where the answers lie. Mm. You know, when you're in a reality where this holographic, illusory, physical reality is merely a holographic projection of a waveform information field or fields, then if you don't go back to the source field, then you're not going to change the hologram in any significant way at all. Because, you know, if you want to change the pictures on the screen of the computer, you have to change the data on the disk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, then it ain't going to change. And so we are in this bind whereby the known, the assumed known, is predominant in terms of what's considered normal. And anyone challenging that presumed known is considered not normal. And yet that presumed known normal is utter madness. It's insanity,
mm-hmm.
as well as, you know, supreme ignorance in so many areas, not least in relating to the nature of the reality we are experiencing. And, you know, I came across a little theme in my life in the last, like, 3 weeks. And it's been people like Leonardo da Vinci.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I've looked more deeply into da Vinci and another guy who followed him shortly after he died, but 2 decades, a bit more after he died, another guy that was based in Italy, though he moved around, was called Giordano Bruno, burned at the stake by the Roman Inquisition in 1600. But when you look at these two people, they were extraordinary in what they knew. I mean, when you look at the notebooks of da Vinci, 500 years ago, people remember him mostly as an artist, but actually he was a fantastic scientist, inventor, you know, just phenomenal for the time.
Right.
In fact, I watched a documentary on him a couple of days ago, where what they did was they took some of his inventions that were just drawn and then the technical data written next to them in his notebooks.
Right.
500 years ago, and they got engineers and people, there's about four examples, to see if they worked by putting them together now, and they worked. And not only did they work, he had put a specific flaw into every single one to make them not work, because there was no copyright or anything like that in those days, and therefore if anyone found his books, they could know the technology. So he used to put a flaw in them, and as soon as they turned the flaw around, and it was pretty much the similar thing every time, mm-hmm. they worked. This is 500 years ago. And then you've got Bruno, who was looking at the cosmos and talking about there are multiple worlds out there, and those stars are actually suns, and there's planets going around them, and there's multiple worlds and all the rest of it. He got burned at the stake, like I said, for
right.
saying that. Why? Because the known is terrified of the unknown. Because the unknown is the end of the preeminence and predominance of the known, the presumed known. And why? And then people say about Bruno and they say about Da Vinci, they were so far ahead of their time.
Right. They were visionaries.
They weren't. They were beyond time. This is the key for me. We perceive time as this linear body process, which is nothing more than sequences or mm-hmm. events in the now being put in a sequence by the brain, etc. And we therefore see back in history, now and in the future, when none of it exists. So it's only the now, and all those things exist in the same now. But what time is information encoded into the program of our reality, and thus we decode information into a sequence which appears to pass through time. For instance, if you put a disc of a computer game in a computer, the whole game and everything that takes place from start to finish is on that disc. But you put it on the screen, and suddenly it goes from scene to scene to scene and gives the impression of time moving. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's all on the same disc. It's on the same now. So if you stay only within the realms of what I call mind-body, the realms dominated by the five senses, etc., then you are trying to understand the reality and the potential of your reality that you're experiencing while being in the reality that you're experiencing. You're in the world and you're also of it. You have no other fix mm-hmm. or source to give you another point of observation of what's going on here. If you can open your mind, expand your mind, expand your heart, even more important, and go and move your point of attention beyond time-space into the greater consciousness, beyond time, then you can access that infinite knowledge, awareness, potential, understanding that is there just waiting to be tapped into. So the genius people, like so-called ahead of their time, like Da Vinci and Bruno, what they were doing, they were going beyond time, and they were tapping into that source. Thus, they were bringing from the no time into the perceived time and the time-controlled concepts of possibility that within their own reality, no one had even ever thought of, never mind conceived or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for me, we get deluded and bewildered and misled by the fact that we see the Stone Age. We see the Renaissance at the time of Da Vinci, etc. We see the Victorian Age. We see what we see as present day.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just a sequence of events within a tiny, tiny range of frequency. At the time of the Stone Age, that infinite library of knowledge, awareness beyond time existed, just as it does in the modern Stone Age, just as it did in Da Vinci's time and Bruno's time and all these other people.
Mm-hmm.
And the trick is just having the awareness to be able to move beyond it and to be able to break the control of our perception of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So we can move our point of attention beyond it and access all this knowledge. And so the authorities of any day and any era have always feared and targeted what they call visionaries, because they know a true visionary is simply going beyond time and space and accessing the greater awareness and therefore the greater insight and understanding of what this world's about. And they want to basically lock down that and stop anyone getting out there. This is why they want people microchipped. This is why they want people drugged. This is why the things in the food and the drink. It's all about holding our point of attention within time and space, because that's what they control. So the known is time and space. The unknown is beyond time and space. And that's why the known is all they're interested in teaching people. And the unknown is not only frowned upon, but it's the devil and all that stuff.
Right, right. You're a heretic. We're going to burn you at the stake.
Yeah.
And then, you know, well, you know, in a way, and, you know, I'm not exactly comparing either one of us to Da Vinci or Bruno, although for all we know, we could be them or tapped into their energy field. But, you know, you look at, you know, for me, myself, and I know your experiences, you know, 20, 30 years ago, everybody thought you were insane. 20, 30 years ago, people said I was a heretic, I was crazy, I was a conspiracy freak. And now when the world has proven us true, we're geniuses all of a sudden. So
I want to, if you can find this here, I'll find it in a second. I've had so many coincidences and synchronicities with regard to Da Vinci in the last, like, 2 weeks. And so someone sent me some Da Vinci quotes. Now, these were said, Maria, 500 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Hell happens when the evil of the world exceeds our belief that we can conquer. If you find from your own experience that something is a fact and it contradicts what some authority has written down, then you must abandon the authority and base your reasoning on your own findings.
Mm-hmm.
Life is pretty simple. You do some stuff, most fails, some works. You do more of what works. If it works big, others quickly copy it. Then you do something else. The trick is doing the something else.
Right.
Nothing strengthens authority so much as silence. Obstacles cannot crush me. Every obstacle yields to stern resolve. He whose gaze is fixed on a distant star will not falter. I love those who can smile in trouble, who can gather strength from distress and grow brave by reflection.
Mm.
'Tis the business of little minds to shrink, but they whose heart is firm and whose conscience approves their conduct will pursue their principles unto death. There are three classes of people: those who see when they're shown, those who do not see.
Hmm.
Principles for the development of a complete mind. Study the science of art. Study the art of science. Develop your own senses. Especially learn how to see. Realize that everything connects to everything else. All our knowledge has its origin in our perceptions. He talked about the average human mind, and he said, it looks without seeing, listens without hearing, touches without feeling, eats without tasting, moves without physical awareness, inhales without awareness of odor or fragrance, and talks without thinking. You will never have a greater or lesser dominion than that over yourself. The height of a man's success is gauged by his self-mastery. the depth of his failure by his self-abandonment. And this law is the expression of eternal justice. He who cannot establish dominion over himself will have no dominion over others. He who does not oppose evil commands it be done. Learning is the only thing the mind never exhausts, never fears, and never regrets. This is what comes when you go beyond the program. And when I've known about these people for a long time, and I've looked at Bruno in the past, but I've looked at it in more detail in the last couple of weeks or so. And when you see Bruno and what he said, when you see Da Vinci and what he said, when you see Socrates, the ancient Greek philosopher, and what he said, and others, they're saying the same thing.
Right.
Why? Because they're tapping in to the same source. And that's the source they don't want us to get to, because then, when enough people do it, the world has got to change.
Well, there's been so many people, David, throughout the years, you know, that teach you how to access what they call, or we refer to as, the universal consciousness. But so many people today are unconscious, and obviously, according to Da Vinci, they were unconscious 500 years ago, too.
Well, there's a great line from Bruno. I won't get this exact, but it's close enough. He said, you know, that people who are called insane for, if you like, talking about things beyond the known, they're not called insane because they do not know. They're called insane because they over-know. Hmm. Exactly. It's because you access something beyond the known, and then everyone who is lassoed and hogtied to the known, mm-hmm, sees you as crazy by definition. No, you're not crazy. You're different.
Thank you
for that, you know. So we're looking at a common tale, a common recurring theme throughout human history. I mean, the whole Inquisition stuff was about suppressing those who are awakening to the unknown.
Exactly.
It's still there. It's still there. I mean, I've been through it in my life with mass ridicule.
I know.
Again,
so have I.
You know, they try to crush you, but they can't crush you. Because once you get beyond the known into the infinite awareness, and you get a memory of the true nature of self, then they can't crush you, because it's uncrushable.
Well, you know, when you know, you just know that you know. And when I was a kid, I had a very serious accident when I was 4, and I basically died and came back. Boring story, but I'll tell it one day. But when I came back, I knew, okay? I knew all these things. Now, David, understand, I was living in an Italian Catholic neighborhood in Brooklyn. And we're looking at, you know, the mid-50s.
Right.
And I come out of this coma with a patch over my eye and all this, and I start talking about parallel selves, multi-universes, looking around at how we were living, saying, this isn't the way we're supposed to be living. This isn't my home. How the hell do I get out of here? And, you know, it was very difficult for my older sister to handle the change in me. And it wasn't until maybe 40 years later, when Neil Walsh came out with his Conversations with God book, and my sister's book club was reading it, and my sister said, wait a minute. My sister Maria knew all this stuff when she was like 4 years old. She was talking about this. So talk about ridiculed. It was a wonder that they didn't hang me at the stake. Well, burn me at the stake. I think it'd be hard to hang you at the stake. But when you know, everybody does, because it's so different. You know, I assumed everybody knew what I knew.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point, too, about knowing, because in the new book, which is massive, there are many themes that go through it, and one of them is the nature of the way our reality has been inverted. And when I mean inverted, I mean completely and utterly inverted in every area of our reality. Mm-hmm. And one of the great inversions perhaps right up there with any of them, is the inversion of the brain being the arbiter and center of intelligence. It's the heart. The heart is the connection to higher levels of awareness. And the brain, supposed to serve the heart, the heart's knowing and awareness becomes, through the brain, physical activity. Mm. Physical response, what we call physical anyway. Holographic response, shall we say, to the knowing of the heart. What they've done is close down the heart in terms of its true nature. And if you look at the research of, like, the Heart Math Institute in America, they've done some fantastic research on the true nature of the heart and the power of the heart, electromagnetic power and what have you. And the heart is clearly, from their research alone, never mind what you know when you know, is actually the center of everything in our perceptions. Mm-hmm. And so what they've done by closing down the heart, they've moved the servant and they've made it the governor. So the brain is everything. And so when I look around the world, I see heart people, the few, but gathering in number all the time, and brain people, which dominate it. Right. And brain people are the people of the known, and heart people are people of the unknown. And so by focusing everything on the brain, I mean, they're trying to find consciousness and memory in the brain. You won't find consciousness in the brain because it's a switching station. Mm-hmm. It's a means of getting energetic thought, energetic information decoded into a form that can become conscious within this reality. That's what it is. It doesn't start anything. It responds to. They've now started to see, what do they call it, neuroplasticity. They, you know, the mainstream science dogma was that the brain was as it is, and that's how it is, and will never change. Now they're starting to realize that actually the brain does change because it responds to information from whichever source. Uh-huh. And it responds to consciousness. It responds to data input of multiple kinds. And in response to that, it can change and it can activate the cellular structure in different ways as a result of the information received. Why? Well, if I put different information into my computer, different things are going to come on the screen because the computer's going to decode different information. It's real simple. Mm-hmm. And so this whole society that we have known or thought we have through history has been a brain society. And so what happens is you have brain people in control and authority, and then you get other brain people who eventually get sick of that, and they have a revolution, and they overthrow the brain people in control, and they put themselves in control. Mm. But the brain people have been replaced by other brain people, and thus the society goes on in its myopia under the new regime, and so it goes on and goes on. Mm. The real revolution is to open the heart, to move into the realms of knowing. And, you know, you've only got to talk to classic brain people like mainstream journalists to see how most of them simply cannot fathom, they cannot perceive the possibility of knowing without endless books, data, professors agreeing with it, peer-reviewed. Mm. Have you had your knowing peer-reviewed?
Right.
Well, it can't be valid then. Actually, was it peer-reviewed when they said the Earth was flat? I bet it was.
Oh, I can tell you, growing up, I never really looked at my peers as anybody I cared about their opinion.
But the peer review, which is the scientific name for mm-hmm. other scientists agreeing that another scientist's stuff has validity, mm-hmm. is brain people pouring over something from maybe another brain person, in which case they'd probably think, yes, that's valid. But if they pour over something from a heart person, who is coming from knowing rather than thought, then, of course, they just won't be able to fathom it. You know, we've got people in this country, we've got a famous one called Professor Richard Dawkins, who writes books on stuff. He's always trashing alternative views of science and always trashing alternative ways of healing. And he calls it all pseudoscience. Well, this is a man who wrote a book saying that reality is not malleable, but in the same book saying that his understanding of quantum physics was, quote, foggy. Now, if you have quantum physics showing that the earth, the world, the reality is malleable and there is no physical, and you have a esteemed scientist saying it is malleable, it's not malleable, and in effect it is solid, at the same time as saying that his grasp of quantum physics, which shows it isn't solid, is foggy. Well, if someone can give me a greater definition of pseudoscience, then I'd like to hear it, because I can't think of one. And yet these are the people welded to the known, or they think is known, that are dominating human perception, and of course through politics. I mean, see, this is an interesting point. You know, once you take as your base belief that the world is solid, everything that comes from that must be flawed, from that basic, outstanding, original flaw. So what you have in science is they accept that quantum physics exists, because it exists. They but all these other disciplines, they then crack on as if it doesn't exist. I mean, it's like the ultimate cognitive dissonance. Yes, okay, quantum physics proves the world is not solid, but I'm going to crack on with my discipline as if it is. And this is where the whole, you know, chaotic nonsense comes from. But then you go into politics, and the politicians are making decisions on possibility and no possibility, on technology and its effect and all the rest of it, on the say-so of scientists who have no clue of the reality that they are talking about. You have health policy all over the world through government and legislation dictated by scientists and doctors who are clueless about the nature of reality itself, the nature of the human body itself, and how it all works. Although there'll be some at the core of these secret societies in these fields that will know, just don't want us to know. But most of them literally don't know, because they've been through the system of education where the known has told them what they should believe is known. And then they go off into the specializations in medicine and science and all the rest of it, and they're told the known in their specialization. Journalists come through the same process of education and university, all that stuff, and so they go off believing in the same known. So to them, when a scientist or a doctor says this, well, it must be true and have validity because they've been through the same known indoctrination, and so it must be true because the known is true. And then some people like me come along and say, no, it's like this, it's like that. Yeah, you're crazy, you're mad. And this is the vortex that this world has got caught in. And the only way out of it is to go move your point of attention from the known to the unknown, from the time-space into no time. And
Or as I like to...
It's like the curtains open on the stage and you see what's behind them.
Well, you know, I've been saying for a long time, and people are finally understanding what I've been saying for decades, that the only ticket out of this reality is a spiritual one. And as long as people are going to stay stuck in their learning and their this reality and not open their mind and open their heart to other realities and a true spirituality, spiritual adventures, which I'm sure Da Vinci and so many great teachers and artists have had, yourself included, nothing changes, David. David, we're going to take a short break, but when we get back, I want to ask you a couple of questions about your new book. So stay with us. David and I will be right back.
Hi, folks. This is John Neems in Las Vegas saying to you to get with the program and subscribe to Maria.net today. She has the best truth out there. And if Lennon were here, he'd tell you to do the same.
If Lennon were here, he'd see things so clear. He'd know what to do.
And Maria knows what to do.
And he'd inspire you.
And she inspires you, too.
He'd see through their lies.
How many lies do we have, huh?
That terror
so subscribe today to Maria.net.
He'd know what is hoax.
And she'll tell you what the hoaxes are.
He'd know how to coax you. If Lennon were here, he'd leave with no fear. He'd know that Iraq is just another Vietnam. He'd be at his best, singing songs of protest. He'd know who really brought the towers down.
Subscribe today now.
Imagine.
Maria.
Imagine.
Maria.net. Thank you.
Okay, I'm back. Welcome to Conversations with David, David Icke and myself. We get to do this once a month, which is real fun for both of us. I hope it's fun for you, David, because it is for me.
Yes, yeah, nice to have a chat.
Your new book, when's it going to be ready?
November.
Oh, okay.
It's just gone into the production process, which can take a long time because, you know, this one's massive.
Oh, my God, massive, bigger than your last one?
it's massive, massive. It's up to this point, it's a life's work, really. And
I can't wait. Can't wait to get my copy. You know,
What's happened, you know, in the last year? I started writing it about a year in last February, and I stopped writing for 3 months when I was preparing for the Wembley event last year. And then picked it up immediately afterwards and finished it last week, actually early this week. Not that it matters, it's been a few days ago anyway. And in that year, I went back to Peru last April for my birthday, 60th birthday, and things happened to me there. And so something happened. It's like the kaleidoscope moved. And suddenly everything was crystal clear. And you could take anything and put it in its place because you could see what you were looking at. And that's kind of what happened. And that, you know, the book is going to be about 435,000 words, which is massive. Mm-hmm. It's 40 chapters. It's got 900 images and illustrations.
Wow.
And 32 pages of original color art. It's the biggest book I've written, and it's the easiest book I've written. I've been sitting in this chair 10, 15 hours a day, you know, for much of the year, putting it together and researching the background so you can write it. But in terms of ease of writing, it's been a breeze, really, which is extraordinary given the size of it. Mm-hmm. There were no, you know, days when you couldn't write. It just all flowed out, I'm so pleased with it. It's really, you give me a buzz, you know.
Great, I'm looking forward to
something,
it.
Something that my life to this point has been leading to.
Well, I find that's usually the case as we continue along, especially when you think, okay, my work is done, and then all of a sudden there's a whole lot more coming down the road.
I think there's a lot of work to do yet.
Right.
I'm not planning on leaving for a long time.
Oh, good. I meant to ask you, you know, did you have a good birthday this year? I know you were taking some time off just to enjoy your birthday. Normal things.
Well, yeah, kind of, but you know, with me, you know, I can't, you know, move away from this for very long. I had a nice day with my grandkids and stuff. It was good, yeah, but. You know, it was next day straight back because, you know, like we've chatted before, you know, I don't see my life as a life. I see my life as a job,
right.
As something I have to do, as something I need to do. And so, you know, I don't need what they call a balanced life.
I understand.
My balance is over the totality of life,
right,
not over this tiny little experience here now.
Right.
I have my social moments, but they're few and far between because there's always something to do.
I understand. I don't even remember the last time I saw my grandkids. So I totally understand, David. But I have to tell you, I really enjoyed talking with your son, Gareth. I think he did a great job. I love his book, too.
Yeah, he's a very bright fella, is Gaz, and he's got terrific talent in music and writing songs. I mean, he writes them for fun. I mean, the speed he writes them.
Mm.
But the thing about Gaz is, I mean, it's an interesting story, really. Gareth, I mean, when I was at school, I spent my time looking out the window most of the time, daydreaming. It just passed me by.
Mm.
But I was a swot compared with Gaz. I mean, Gaz just didn't want to know, really. And when he took his final exams before leaving school, he didn't get B's or C's or D's. He got E's.
Oh.
You know, and I was very proud of him, really, because, you know, if you're going to not do something, then,
Don't do it all the way.
What I didn't realize until years later is that Gareth and my daughter, Kerry, who at one time went to the same school, they would go to school and get the register read, and then they'd be off. And they'd spend the day, you know, doing whatever, and then just going back when they had to give the illusion that they were there. I didn't know any of this. And and so what you would have in the normal course of events is Gareth would be called an educational failure.
Mm.
Someone who was not very bright and not very clever, as they put it. Mm. And look at him, he got E's in his exams. And then here you have a guy who is highly, highly intelligent, has fantastic natural talent in music, which he's getting by going beyond the known. That's where the great musicians, the Mozarts, and the great artists, that's where they go to get their inspiration.
Right.
And so here's a guy that the system rejected and said, you know, write him off. And look at him. Mm. And it, you know, the same with me. You know, I never passed an exam in my life of any note. Didn't take most of them. I left school at 15 to become a footballer and didn't even take any major exam at the end of my school life. And then I've done all my learning in my own time, in my own way, on my own basis. And I have not missed a formal education in any way, shape, or form, neither has Gareth. And it just shows you, you know, the system tells you to be clever, to be intelligent, you must do this. Well, often, again, what did I say earlier? The whole of society is an inversion. Well, often it's the opposite is the case. And there's a video on YouTube. It's a girl, I don't know, a few years ago now. And she's, I think if you put the words in like valedictory speech or something like that.
Right.
And this girl is brilliant. It's absolutely sensational. This girl, she's in a white kind of white clothing because she's stood out and she was the top of the school and you know, the best pupil. Why? Because she passed her exams with, you know, flying colors. And she comes to the microphone. Fortunately, someone was filming this from the audience. And behind her are all the teachers and the headmaster and all that stuff. And they're waiting for their star pupil to make a star pupil speech. And what she did, from the point of view that she was considered a massive success by the system, is that she demolished the system and dismantled it, how it worked and how it programmed people. And it's absolutely brilliant if anyone wants to watch it. And the funniest thing of all is the teachers and the stuff behind her, They're all sitting there, straight-backed, proud, star pupil. And then as the speech unfolded, it started to dawn on them what she was saying.
Right.
And their body language is hilarious. And, you know, we really don't have to do what the system tells us. We have to do what our hearts tell us. And my heart told me when I was at school, I don't need this rubbish. Gareth's heart told him, I don't need this rubbish. And it's proved to be the case, because why do you have to learn so much before the age of 18, 20? Why? Why?
So they can capture you for the rest of your life.
Exactly. To program your perception and thus your behavior for the rest of your life. That's right. Why they bombard you with it. You know what, I think there should be a global Gandhian revolution of non-cooperation from all the kids on the planet. They should refuse to do homework. Refuse to do homework. Mm-hmm. Let's think about this. You can't pass on what children and young people need to know through most of the working day, 5 days a week, for their entire childhood. Instead, you have to give them homework when they leave, so they don't even have an evening or a weekend to express their own uniqueness. I mean, what's all that about? I know what it's about. You know what it's about.
Of course.
It's about continuing the programming and not letting the right brain get activated. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. It's like, deep breath, take a step back, look at it again. Mm-hmm. Homework? What are you talking about?
Right.
This stuff do you want to pour into this child's head through its formative years? You know, don't do it. Mass refusal.
Right. Well, you know, here in the States, we have 9-year-olds marching to Washington demanding a proper education. You have teenagers now that are making scientific discoveries that, you know, are shocking to the teachers, et cetera. And, of course, when they say, you know, these kids are getting awards or they're going to Washington or whatever, I worry for them.
Yeah.
Because I know when you're that smart, the government's going to try to lasso you in and control you or have you work on some new weapon for them instead of something that would benefit mankind.
Exactly, exactly.
But what I'm seeing is, you know, I think it's an awakening of the extremely intuitive star children on this planet. You know, children today are not going to conform like they did in the 50s.
Yes, the number of young people who have sussed it early is very, very encouraging.
Yes, it is.
There's a lot of young people who become old people and never suss it at all, and they continue as well. But when you come into this world today, you are hit as a young person, as a child, by more programming and distortion than probably, almost definitely, without question, any child or children or generation in known human history. Mm-hmm. Because you're straight into this increasingly prison-like structure and environment of school. You have cameras all around the place, filming your everybody move. Mm-hmm. You have a curriculum that is designed specifically to stop you awakening to your true intelligence. You have the bombardment of the media and peer pressure and products and all the rest of it, and phones, the programming you all the time, and they're addictive to people. And you see them everywhere, these phones. And so people are getting that, young people and children are getting that like no other generation, and yet still large numbers are sussing it.
Right.
And that's very, very encouraging. And what does it show? The power of consciousness over programming, which is the way out of here.
Absolutely.
The power of consciousness over programming. Programming is the sixth stone weak link to consciousness. That's why they have to keep us in mind. And then the program rules.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you think about all the conscious that came out worldwide against Monsanto last week and the media barely touching it?
Yeah, that was a wonderful example. You see, the people are stirring. The people are stirring awake, and what's focusing their attention is that the world is changing more and more obviously in ways that they don't like. And, you know, I came across this Bob Marley quote today, which was, put it on my website. It was words to the effect of, you never know your own strength, or never know how strong you are until being strong is the only option. I'm going to find it here. You get it word for word. It's just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful quote. Mm-hmm. Here you go. You never know how strong you are until being strong is the only choice you have. Can we all know that? If you've been through any challenge.
Right.
I can't take any more. And then you do.
Right.
And what is happening is people are starting to reach that point where being strong is the only choice they have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very dangerous to the control system.
Of course.
Because like I've said before, I think, in our chats, if you are attacked by an army and it's you think it's stronger than you are, then if you have a way of retreating, then you'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're caught in the ravine and there's no way out except the way the army's coming at you, then your whole perception changes.
Right.
Because now you've got nothing to lose.
Exactly.
And that's what's starting to happen, is that this freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
Mm-hmm.
This mentality is starting to impose itself. And you add to that the increasing true education that people are having through the circulation of this information.
Absolutely.
And suddenly you are the lion is starting to roar, or preparing to roar, and this Monsanto situation is an example of it, and also, you know, the media reaction to it. You know, the mainstream media is useless. It's a waste of space. It's a waste of time. It's a complete irrelevance.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need to do, and you know, I'm going to announce something on Saturday on my website, is we need to create our own structures and our own ways of communication, our own
mm-hmm.
networks of communication, so that we can not try to get information out through the mainstream media, but bypass it, because that's a much better way of using your energy and
right.
using your efforts than to batter your head against a wall or batter your head against a door that's not going to open, because the door's owned, i.e. the mainstream media, by those that don't want the door to open. So, you know, we are at a very, very interesting time, at a very challenging time, but a very exciting time, because I am beginning to see the lion start to stir itself awake.
Mm.
And the next few years are going to be very, very interesting and very, very crucial to where this world goes, where this reality goes.
Right. Absolutely. Well, David, thanks so much for joining me today. And don't forget to get me a copy of that book as soon as it's done.
Yeah, it'll be delivered by truck, I think.
Well, thanks so much. And we'll talk again soon.
Cheers, Maria.
Cheers to you, too.
Bye.
Bye. David Icke, check out his work, davidicke.com. David's got so many books out. I have loads of interviews with him in the archives here. All of them different. David and I never pre-script anything. We never know what we're going to talk about till we start talking. So hopefully you enjoyed today's show. Tomorrow I'll be back with the news. Thank you for supporting the work. Let other people know, and I'll see you guys then. Thanks.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.